Chapter 23, page 273. First preparative for Christ's death on his enemy's part, treason of Judas. And while he yet spake, lo, Judas, one of the 12, came, and with him a great multitude with swords and staves, from the chief priests and elders of the people. Now he that betrayed him gave them a sign, saying, Whomsoever I shall kiss, that same is he. Hold him fast. And forthwith he came to Jesus and said, Hail, Master, and kissed him. Matthew 26, verses 47 through 49. We have seen how Christ prepared himself for his death. He has commended his people to the Father, instituted the blessed memorial of his death, poured out his soul to God in the garden, and now he is ready and waits for the coming of his enemies. And think you that they were idle on their part? No, their malice made them restless. They had agreed with Judas to betray him. Under his conduct, a band of soldiers was sent to apprehend him. The hour so long expected is come. For while he yet spake, lo, Judas, one of the 12, came, and with him a great multitude, with swords and staves. These words contain the first preparative act on their part for the death of Christ, even to betray him, and that by one of his own disciples. Now they execute what they had plotted, verses 14 and 15. And, number one, we have here a description of the traitor, and it is remarkable how carefully the several evangelists have described him, both by his name, surname, and office. Judas, Judas Iscariot, Judas Iscariot, one of the 12, that he might not be mistaken for Jude or Judas the apostle. God is tender of the name and reputation of his upright servants. His office, one of the 12, is added to aggravate the sin and to show how that prophecy was accomplished in him. Yea, mine own familiar friend, in whom I trusted, which did eat of my bread, hath lifted up his heel against me. Psalm 41, verse 9. Lo, this was the traitor, and this was his name and office. Number 2. You have a description of the treason, or an account of what this man did. He led an armed multitude to the place where Christ was, gave them a signal to discover him, and encouraged them to lay hands on him and hold him fast. This the devil put into his heart, employing the lust of covetousness, which was predominant there. What will not a carnal heart attempt if the devil suit a temptation to the predominant lust, and God withhold restraining grace? Number 3. You have here the way in which the hellish plot was executed. It was managed both with force and with fraud. He comes with a multitude, armed with swords and staves, in case they should meet with any resistance. And he comes to him with a kiss, which was his signal, lest they should mistake the man. For they aimed neither at small nor great, save only at the King of Israel, the King of Glory. Here was much ado, you see, to take a harmless lamb that did not once start from them, but freely offered up himself to them. And, number 4, observe when this treasonable design was executed upon Christ. It was while he stood among his disciples, exhorting them to prayer and watchfulness, dropping heavenly and most seasonable counsels. While he yet spake, lo, Judas, and with him a multitude, came with swords and staves. Surely then it is no better than a Judas plot to disturb and afflict the servants of God in the discharge of their duties. Hence it was the lot of our Lord Jesus Christ to be betrayed into the hands of his enemies by a false and pretended friend. Look, as Joseph was betrayed and sold by his brethren, David by Ahithophel, his old friend, Samson by Delilah that lay in his bosom, so Christ by Judas, one of the 12, a man, his friend, his familiar, that had been so long conversant with him. He that by profession had lifted up his hand to Christ, now by treason, lifts up his heel against him. He bids the soldiers bind those blessed hands that not long before had washed the traitor's feet. We will here consider the character of Judas and the relations he sustained to Christ, his treason in its several aggravations, the motives by which he was governed, and the issue of this treason both as to Christ and as to himself. Roman numeral 1. Judas was eminent by reason of the dignity to which Christ had raised him. He was one of the 12, one retained not in a more general and common, but in the nearest and most intimate and honorable relation to Jesus Christ. There were, in the time of Christ, secret disciples, men that believed but kept their stations and abode with their relations in their callings. There were also 70 whom Christ sent forth, but none of these were so much with Christ or so eminent in respect of their place as the 12. They were Christ's family. It was the highest dignity that was conferred upon any, and of this number was Judas. And being one of the 12, he was daily conversant with Christ, often joined him in prayer, often sat at his feet, hearing his gracious words. It was one of Augustine's 3 wishes that he had seen Christ in the flesh. Judas not only saw him, but dwelt with him, traveled with him, and ate and drank with him. And during the whole time of his abode with him, all Christ's conduct towards him was obliging and winning. Yea, such was the condescension of Christ to this wretched man, that he washed his feet, and that but a little before he betrayed him. In some respect he was preferred to the rest, for he had not only a joint commission with them to preach the gospel to others, though poor unhappy wretch himself being a castaway, but he had a peculiar office. He bare the bag, that is, he was an almoner, or the steward of the family, to take care to provide for the necessary accommodations of Christ in them. Now who could ever have suspected that such a man as this should have sold the blood of Christ for a little money, that ever he should have proved a perfidious traitor to his Lord, who had called him, honored him, and dealt with him so tenderly. Roman numeral 2. But what did this man do, and what are the just aggravations of his sin? He most basely and unworthily sold and delivered Christ into his enemy's hands, to be put to death, and all this for 30 pieces of silver. Blush, O heavens, and be astonished, O earth, at this. In this sin, most dark and horrid aggravations appear. Judas had seen the majesty of God in him whom he betrayed. He had seen the miracles that Christ wrought, which none but Christ could do. He knew that by the finger of God he had raised the dead, cast out devils, and healed the sick. He could not but see the beams of divine majesty shining in his very face, in his doctrine, and in his life. Yea, he committed this wickedness after personal warnings and premonitions given him by Christ. He had often told them in general that one of them should betray him. Mark 14, verse 18. He also denounced a dreadful woe upon him that should do it. The Son of Man indeed goeth, as it is written of him, but woe to that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. Good had it been for that man if he had never been born. Verse 21. This was spoken in Judas's presence. And one would have thought so dreadful a doom as Christ denounced upon the man that should attempt this, should have driven him from the thought of such wickedness. Nay, Christ came nearer to him than this, and told him he was the man. For when Judas, who was the last that put the question to Christ, asked him, Master, is it I? Christ's answer imports as much as the plain affirmation, Thou hast said. Matthew 26:25. Moreover, he did it not out of a blind zeal against Christ, as many of his other enemies did, of whom it is said that, had they known him, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory. 1 Corinthians 2:8. But he did it for money. What will ye give me, and I will betray him? Matthew 26:15. He sells him, and he sells him at a low rate too, which showed what a groveling estimate he had of Christ. He can part with him for 30 pieces of silver. If these pieces were the shekels of the sanctuary, they amounted but to £3.15. But it is supposed they were the common shekels, which were mostly used in buying and selling, and then his price that he put upon the Savior of the world was but £1.17.6. A goodly price, as the prophet calls it, that he was valued at. Zechariah 11, verses 12 and 13. I confess it is a wonder that he asked no more, knowing how much they longed for his blood, and that they offered no more for him. But how then should the scriptures have been fulfilled? Oh, what a sale was this, to sell that blood, of which all the gold and silver in the world is not worth one drop, for a trifle. Still, the wickedness of the sin rises higher and higher. He left Christ in a most heavenly employment when he went to make this soul undoing bargain. For if he went away from the table, as some think, then he left Christ instituting and administering those heavenly signs of his body and blood. There he saw, or might have seen, the bloody work he was going about, acted as in a figure before him. If he tarried through the ordinance, as others suppose he did, then he left Christ singing a heavenly hymn and preparing to go where Judas was preparing to meet him. Besides, what he did was not done by the persuasions of any. The high priest sent not for him, and without doubt was surprised when he came to him with such an errand. For it could never enter into any of their hearts that one of his own disciples could be drawn into a confederacy against him. No, he went as a volunteer, offering himself to this work, which still heightens the sin and makes it out of measure heinous. The manner in which he executes his treasonable design adds further malignity to the deed. He comes to Christ with fawning words and demeanor, "Hail, Master," and kissed him. Here is honey in the tongue and poison in the heart. Let us inquire, Roman numeral 3, the cause and motives of this wickedness, how he came to attempt and perpetrate such a villainy. Maldonate, the Jesuit, criminates the Protestant divines for affirming that God had a hand in ordering and overruling this fact. But we say that Satan and his own lust were the impulsive cause of it, that God, as it was a wicked treason, permitted it, and as it was the delivering of Christ to death, was not only the permitter, but the wise and holy director and orderer of it, and by the wisdom of his providence overruled it to the great good and advantage of the church. Satan inspired the motion. Then entered Satan into Judas, surnamed Iscariot, and he went his way. Luke 22, verses 3 and 4. His own lusts, like dry tinder, kindled presently. His heart was covetous. They covenanted to give him money, and he promised, etc. The holy God disposed and ordered all this to the singular benefit and good of his people. The enemies of Christ did whatsoever his hand and counsel had before determined to be done. Acts 4, 28. And by this determinate counsel of God, he was taken and slain. Acts 2, 23. Yet this in no way excuses the wickedness of the instruments, for what they did was done from the power of their own lusts, most wickedly. What he did was, in the unsearchable depth of his own wisdom, most holy. God knows how to fulfill his purposes by the very sins of men, and yet have no communion at all in the sin he so overrules. Judas minded nothing but his own advantage, to get money. God permitted that lust to work, but overruled the issue to his own eternal glory and the salvation of our souls. Roman numeral 4. But what was the end and issue of this deed? As to Christ, it was his death. For the hour being come, he doth not meditate and escape, nor put forth the power of his Godhead to deliver himself out of their hands. Indeed, he showed what he could do when he made them fall back and stagger with a word. He could have obtained more than 12 legions of angels to have been his lifeguard. But how then should the scriptures have been fulfilled, or our salvation accomplished? And what did Judas get as a reward of his wickedness? It ended in the ruin both of his soul and body. For immediately a death pang of despair seized his conscience, which was so intolerable that he ran to the halter for a remedy, and so falling headlong he burst asunder, and all his bowels gushed out. Acts 1, verse 18. As for his soul, it went to its own place, verse 25, even the place appointed for the son of perdition, as Christ calls him. John 17, verse 12. His name to this day, and shall be to all generations, a byword, a proverb of reproach. Inference number 1. Hence we learn that the greatest professors have need to be jealous of their own hearts, and look well to the grounds and principles of their profession. O professors, look to your foundation and build not upon the sand, as this poor creature did. That is sound advice indeed which the apostle gives. Let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 12. O beware of a loose foundation. If you begin your profession as Judas did, no wonder if it shall end as his did. Beware therefore that you hold not the truth in unrighteousness. Judas did so. He knew much, but lived not according to what he knew, for he was still of a worldly spirit in the height of his profession. His knowledge never had any saving influence upon his heart. He preached to others, but he himself was a castaway. He had much light, but still walked in darkness. He had no knowledge to do himself good. Beware you live not in a course of secret sin. Judas did so, and that was his ruin. He made a profession indeed, and appeared well, but he was a thief. John 12, verse 6. He made no conscience of committing sin, so he could but cover and hide it from men. This helped out his ruin, and so it will thine, reader, if thou be guilty herein. A secret way of sinning, under the covert of profession, will either break out at last to the observation of men, or else slide thee down insensibly to hell, and leave thee there only this comfort, that nobody at present shall know thou art there. Beware of hypocritical pretenses of religion to accommodate self-ends. Judas was a man that had great skill in this. He had a mind to fill his own purse by the sale of that costly ointment which Mary bestowed upon our Savior's feet. And what a neat cover had he for it! This might have been sold for 300 pence and given to the poor. Here was charity to the poor, or rather poor charity, for this was only a blind to his base self-ends. O Christian, be plain-hearted, take heed of craft and cunning in matters of religion. Beware of self-confidence. Judas was very confident of himself. Last of all, Judas said, Master, is it I? Matthew 26:25. But he that was last in the suspicion was first in the transgression. He that trusteth in his own heart is a fool. Proverbs 28:25. It will be your wisdom to keep a jealous eye upon your own heart and still suspect its fairest pretenses. If you would not do as Judas did, or come to such an end, take heed that you live not unprofitably under the means of grace. Judas had the best means of grace that ever man enjoyed. He heard Christ himself preach. He joined often with him in prayer, but he was never the better for it all. It was but as the watering of a dead stick, which will never make it grow, but rot it the sooner. Oh, it is a sad sign, and a sad sin too, when men live under the gospel from year to year, and are never the better. I warn you to beware of these evils, all ye that profess religion. Let these footsteps by which Judas went down to his own place terrify you from following him in them. Number 2. Learn hence also that eminent knowledge and profession greatly aggravate sin. Judas Iscariot, 1 of the 12. Poor wretch, better had it been for him if he had never been numbered with them, nor enlightened with so much knowledge. For this rent his conscience to pieces when he reflected on what he had done, and drove him into the gulf of despair. To sin against clear light is to sin with a high hand. Those that had an agency in the death of Christ, through mistake and ignorance, could receive the pardon of their sin by that blood they shed. Acts 3:19. Take heed, therefore, of abusing knowledge and resting conscience. Number 3. Learn hence that unprincipled professors will sooner or later become apostates. Judas was an unprincipled professor, and see what he came to. Ambition invited Simon Magus to the profession of Christ. He would be some great one. And how quickly did the rottenness of his principles discover itself in the ruin of his profession. That which wants a root must wither. Matthew 13:20-21. That which is the predominant interest will prevail with us in the day of our trial. Hear me, all you that profess religion and have given your names to Christ. If that profession be not built upon a solid and real work of grace in your hearts, you will never honor religion nor save your souls by it. Oh, it is your union with Christ that, like a spring, maintains your profession. So much as you are united to Christ, so much constancy, steadiness, and evenness you will manifest in the duties of religion, and no more. O brethren, when he that professes Christ for company shall be left alone as Paul was, when he that makes religion a stirrup to help himself into the saddle of preferment and honor shall see that he is so advanced to be drawn forth into Christ's camp and endure the heat of the day and not to take his pleasure. In a word, when he shall see all things about him discouraging and threatening, his dearest interest on earth exposed for religion's sake, and that he has no faith to balance his present losses with his future hopes, I say, when it comes to this, you shall then see the rottenness of many hearts discovered, and Judas may have many associates who will part with Christ for the world. O, therefore, look well to your foundation. Number 4. Moreover, in this example of Judas, you may read this truth, that men are never in more imminent danger than when they meet with temptations suited to their besetting sins, to their own iniquity. O, pray that ye may be kept from a violent besetting temptation. Satan knows that when a man is thus tried, he falls by the root. The love of this world was all along Judas' master sin. This was his predominant lust. The devil found out this and suited it with the temptation which carried him immediately. This is the dangerous crisis of the soul. Now you shall see what it is and what it will do. Put money before Judas, and presently you will see what the man is. Number 5. Hence, in like manner, we are instructed that no man knows where he shall stop when he first engages himself in a way of sin. Wickedness, as well as holiness, is not born in its full strength, but grows up to it by insensible degrees. So did the wickedness of Judas. I believe he himself never thought he should have done what he did, and if any had told him, in the beginning of his profession, "Thou shalt sell the blood of Christ for money, thou shalt deliver him most perfidiously into their hands that seek his life," he would have answered, as Hazael did to Elisha, "What, is thy servant a dog that he should do this thing?" 2 Kings 8:13. His wickedness first discovered itself in murmuring and discontent, and taking an irritation at some small matters against Christ, as you may find by comparing John 4, from verse 60 to 70, with John 12, from verse 3 to 9. But see to what it grows at last. That lust or temptation that at first is but a little cloud, as big as a man's hand, may quickly overspread the whole heaven. Our engaging in sin is as the motion of a stone downhill. It strengthens itself by going, and the longer it runs, the more violent. Beware of the smallest beginnings of temptation. No wise man will neglect or slight the smallest spark of fire, especially if he see it among barrels of gunpowder. You carry gunpowder about you. Oh, take heed of sparks. Number 6. Did Judas sell Christ for money? What a conqueror is the love of this world! How many hath it cast down wounded! What great professors have been dragged at its chariot wheels as its captives! Hymenaeus and Philetus, Ananias and Sapphira, Demas and Judas, with thousands and 10,000 since their days, led away in triumph. It drowns men in perdition, 1 Timothy 6:9. In that pit of perdition, this son of perdition fell, and never rose more. O you that so court and pursue it, that so love and admire it, make a stand here. Pause a little upon this example. Consider to what it brought this poor wretch, whom I have presented to you dead, eternally dead, by the mortal wound that the love of this world gave him. It destroyed both soul and body. Pliny tells us that the mermaids delight to be in green meadows, into which they draw men by their enchanting voices. But, saith he, there always lies heaps of dead men's bones by them, a lively emblem of a bewitching world. Good had it been for many professors of religion if they had never known what the riches and honors and pleasures of this world are. Number 7. Did Judas fancy so much happiness from a little money that he would sell Christ to get it? Learn, then, that what wherein men promise themselves much pleasure and contentment in the way of sin may prove the greatest curse and misery to them. Judas thought it was a fine thing to get money. He fancied much happiness in it. But how sick was his conscience as soon as he had swallowed it. Oh, take it again, saith he. It gripped him to the heart. He knows not what to do to get rid himself of that money. Oh, mortify your fancies to the world. Count not riches necessary. They that will be rich fall into temptations and many hurtful lusts, which drown men in perdition. 1 Timothy 6:9. You may have your desires gratified with a curse. He that brings home fine clothes infected with the plague is no great gainer, how cheap soever he bought them. Number 8. Was there one, but one of the 12, that proved a traitor to Christ? Learn thence that it is most unreasonable to be prejudiced against religion and the sincere professors of it, because some that profess it prove vile. Should the 11 suffer for one Judas? Alas, they abhorred both the traitor and his treason. As well might the high priest and his servants have condemned Peter, John, and all the rest, whose souls abhorred the wickedness. If Judas proved a vile wretch, yet there were 11 to 1 that remained upright. If Judas proved not, it was not his profession made him so, but his hypocrisy. He never learned it from Christ. If religion must be charged with all the failures of its professors, then there is no pure religion in the world. Name that religion among the professors of which there is not one Judas. Take heed, reader, of prejudices against godliness on this account. The design of the devil, without doubt, is to undo thee eternally by them. Woe to the world because of offenses, Matthew 18, verse 7. Blessed is he that is not offended at Christ. Number 9. Did Judas, one of the 12, do so? Learn thence that a drop of grace is better than a sea of gifts. Gifts have some excellency in them, but the way of grace is the more excellent way, 1 Corinthians 12:31. There is many a learned head in hell. Gifts are the gold that beautifies the temple, but grace is as the temple which sanctifies the gold. One tear, one groan, one breathing of an upright heart is more than the tongues of angels. Poor Christian, thou art troubled that thou canst not speak and pray so fluently as some others. But canst thou go into a corner and there pour out thy soul affectionately, though not rhetorically, to thy Father? Trouble not thyself. It is better for thee to feel one divine impression from God upon thy heart than to have 10,000 fine notions floating in thy head. Number 10. Did the devil win the consent of Judas to such a design as this? Could he get no other but the hand of an apostle to assist him? Learn hence that the policy of Satan lies much in the choice of his instruments. No bird, saith one, like a living bird to tempt others into the net. Austin told an ingenious young scholar that the devil coveted him for an ornament. He knows he has a foul cause to manage, and therefore will get the fairest hand he can to manage it with the less suspicion. Number 11. Did Judas, one of the 12, do this? Then certainly Christians may approve and join with such men on earth whose faces they shall never see in heaven. The apostles held communion a long time with this man and did not suspect him. O, please not yourselves, therefore, that you have communion with the saints here, and that they think and speak charitably of you. All the churches shall know, saith the Lord, that I am he that searcheth the heart and reins, and will give to every man as his work shall be. Revelation 2:23. In heaven we shall meet many that we never thought to meet there, and miss many that we were confident we should see there. Number 12. Did Judas, one of the 12, a man so favored, raised, and honored by Christ, do this? Cease then from man, be not too confident in any. Trust ye not in a friend, put no confidence in a guide. Keep the door of thy lips from her that lieth in thy bosom. Micah 7, verse 5. Not that there is no sincerity in any man, but there is so much hypocrisy in many men, and so much corruption in the best of men, that we should not be too confident in any. Peter's modest expression of Silvanus is a pattern for us. Silvanus, a faithful brother unto you, as I suppose. 1 Peter 5, verse 12. The time shall come, saith Christ, that brother shall betray brother to death. Matthew 10, 21. Charity for others may be your duty, but too great confidence may be your snare. Fear what others may do, but fear thyself more.